We hit hour number two on this Tuesday. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak Chin Community Studios on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Cardinals headed into their bye week, coming off another frustrating loss in San Francisco. Here to talk about that, where the Cardinals are, and a lot of other places we can go with our next guest, Dave Pasch, Cardinals play-by-play voice, ESPN broadcaster, joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Dave, how are you today?
Stan, how are we doing, guys?
Doing good. I made the statement yesterday that we went into this Cardinals season, Dave, just hoping for improvement, that this year wasn't about wins and losses, that it was about improvement. It was about identifying whether or not Kyler Murray was the guy. We've checked that box, I think. But now that the Cardinals have been so close in so many of these games, I'm kind of done with the improvement thing, and I want to see some wins. Am I wrong to feel this way?
No, I think you're right on it. I think that's how they feel as well. I mean, I think the locker room and Cliff Kingsbury post-game comments are in line with that. It's the middle of the season. You've got the players you have. There's only so much you can change. And you're, on the road especially, been really good. You just haven't been able to close out games offensively and defensively. So I think that's frustrating. I'm with you. It's been a great year in terms of realizing that you've got a franchise quarterback and then you've got a head coach that well prepared. I mean, the way they start games, the way they start second halves offensively, they are well prepared. They game plan, they make adjustments. Now they just got to close out games on offense in particular.
All right, Dave, what did you make of the 49ers game-winning touchdown pass? Because there's been a lot of debate about what are you doing conceptually, putting a guy like Chandler Jones in pass coverage, if indeed that was part of the strategy, or do you just chalk that up as the perfect play call in the perfect situation for San Francisco?
You know, I don't know what I have not asked. To be honest, I haven't asked around since the end of the game. Who made the decision? Was it a decision that was made by Vance Joseph with the blessing of Cliff Kingsbury? Was it a decision that was made without the blessing of Cliff Kingsbury? The player that caught the touchdown pass, that was the only snap he had played, if my memory recalls. Yeah. I don't remember seeing him in the game prior to that. So did they assume that this is what the Cardinals are going to do? I don't know. Guys, and you probably have been in the situation too, you've learned over the years, you think you know exactly what's going on and why a call was made, and you find out, here's what happened. This was the call. One guy messed it up. Or this wasn't the call that was relayed, and they ran something wrong. I mean, there's so many variables, especially in football, that we don't know. So it's hard for me to make a guess and say it was a bad call or it was a great call. And what the 49ers did was the perfect thing against that defense. So I'm not going to sit here and try to act like I know.
Dave Pasch, Cardinals play-by-play voice, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. Generally speaking, Dave, on the defensive side of the ball, and I know the Cardinals went into this season thinking they were going to count heavily on Darius Filon and Robert Kimdichie and Zach Allen and Robert Alford, and none of those guys are available right now for various different reasons. But that being said, you got to go to battle with the guys that you have on your roster. Where would you assess the development, the improvement, or lack thereof on the defensive side of the ball right now, and how concerning is it?
Well, I think in general, just the talent level on the defense is a concern. I think Buda Baker's come on lately, which is a good sign, because early in the year I was getting a little concerned. I think we know pretty much now that Hassan Reddick is neither an inside linebacker or an outside linebacker. So what is he? Can you find a role for him on your team going forward? Terrell Suggs, we knew that it was going to be hard to sustain at his age what he's done in, at the latter stages of his career, whether he could keep doing that. Chandler Jones is great. Still think Patrick Peterson's great. But they're light up front. At inside linebacker, I think Jordan Hicks has done a good job. I think he's going to be better if you have a guy that's great next to him. Mm-hmm. I still think there are some questions at safety, and Byron Murphy's played about as well as you can at corner. I think overall, given the lack of talent on that side of the ball, or the lack of development of some guys, or maybe just some guys that can't figure out exactly what they're supposed to be doing, which I think at times appears to be the case with Hassan Reddick, I think they've done okay.
All right. Forgive me for asking you to speculate again, but in a lot of these situations, like the Chandler Jones one, this Cardinals staff is not exactly forthcoming with a lot of answers on a lot of stuff. So I want to ask you this about David Johnson. On Friday, Steve Keim came out and said he had a great week of practice, showed great energy. We saw what happened on Sunday, not just the fact that he didn't play in the second half, but the snaps he did get, he never touched the football. And Cliff Kingsbury did tell us he thinks it's a matter of David just not knowing the offense well enough, which seems weird when the other guy's been here, 2 minutes, and he played 61 snaps on Sunday. What do your instincts tell you is going on here with this story?
It's a good question, Dan. I really don't know. I think I have to look at David Johnson before I start looking at the coaching staff or at the general manager. I made this comment before the game on Sunday. I'm not sure where David Johnson is mentally. You know, just watching him run this year, the previous year, I don't know what's going on in his head. Has he lost the fire? Has he lost the edge? Has he lost the passion? Is he concerned about getting hurt? I know when he hurt his wrist early in the year, he was devastated. He thought it was something that was similar to what he injured in Detroit a couple years ago, and it wasn't. But I think his initial reaction was, oh, my goodness, here we go again. So I just don't know where he's at. And if you're the coaching staff, you can't worry about where he's at anymore. I mean, this is the NFL. We don't know whether he understands the offense. We don't know if he's worried about getting hurt. We just got to move on. I mean, we're trying to win games, and Kenyon Drake has shown that right now he's better than David Johnson. So you play the guy that's better. I don't think it's about trying to worry about getting a guy reps or how much you guys make at this point. You know, you're in the middle of the year, and you're trying to win games. So I think at this point they're not concerned about David Johnson. They're concerned about playing somebody that is better. And when Chase Edmonds comes back, maybe David Johnson doesn't see the field at all. Or maybe after the bye week, they find a way to get him involved, and he makes a big play, and all of a sudden he's back. Because at the beginning of the year, I was starting to think, okay, this is the David Johnson we saw a few years ago. But it hasn't played out that way.
Yeah, that one touchdown he scored against Atlanta, it was a 14-yard reception, and the last 7 yards were all him. And that was like, okay, there he is, and then he went away again.
Yeah, again, is that him? Is that he doesn't know the offense? Is it he, again, just doesn't want to get hurt?
Yeah.
I don't know. Only he knows that. I mean, I saw his tweet, the other day, after the game. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure who that's directed at. I don't know David Johnson very well, but I do know this. He's a thoughtful young man. He's a very nice guy. I don't think he's out to try to embarrass anybody. I don't think that tweet was like, well, I can't believe I didn't play. I think it's just maybe, frustrated with his role. And if I'm him, I would be frustrated. But I just think the coaching staff is beyond trying to, okay, well, how do we make it work with him? We've got another guy over here in Kenyon Drake who's playing great. We've got a guy that's at some point going to come back from injury in Chase Edmonds who's playing great. I think it may be more about that guy than it is about David.
Yeah. What you say about David Johnson, and it's not their responsibility to find out what's in his head at this point, I get it. It does make sense. But you have the whole financial question moving forward. I mean, he's guaranteed a lot of money next year, and it could be a giant cap hit if he's not here. How much do you think that factors in the Cardinals organizational thinking with David Johnson the rest of the year, if at all?
I don't know how much it factors in the rest of the year. I mean, certainly in the offseason, they've got to have that conversation. I think a lot depends on, does Kenyon Drake continue to play well, show that he's shown that he's explosive, he can be dangerous. Chase Edmonds has proven himself. I don't think David Johnson's done. I still think he has a lot to offer. But again, I just don't know where he's at mentally. I don't think it's a physical issue with him. I don't think he's hurt. I just think it's about, what's going on between his ears. And again, going back to what I said earlier, I just think the coaching staff at this point has got to be past, well, we can't worry about this. I mean, we got 5 games left in the season. We're trying to win as many games as we can.
These close calls, these other issues, they can be a little distracting from the bigger picture of Kyler Murray and his development and how this kid just refuses to throw interceptions. Bring us up to date through 11 weeks on how you view his evolution and what it means to the future here.
I think Kyler Murray, given that he's a rookie and how many rookie quarterbacks we've seen just have games where they turn the ball over 3-4 times, we haven't seen that. You know, he's been really good. His quarterback rating's at 90 for a rookie. I think he's impressed. And some of the throws he made, that throw he made to Pharaoh Cooper, where there were two guys on him, he was kind of throwing from, I think, outside the hash marks on the far side and your side on the numbers. That may have been third down and long. That was an incredible throw. I mean, he makes some he's very gifted as a passer. We know he's gifted as a runner, and I think he's really smart about when he gets down. He doesn't take the big hit. He actually took a couple more hits this past game than he had previously. I think overall, if you're a Cardinal fan, you've got to be really pleased with where he's at, given the fact that you don't have a great defense, and at times he hasn't had a great running game. I mean, go back to Russell Wilson. When Russell Wilson was named the starting quarterback of the Seahawks, for the first few years, that team was about their defense and game. The Cardinals right now are about Kyler Murray. That's a lot to ask for a rookie quarterback. They don't have a choice, I think, because of where they're at with their run game and with their defense. So I think that speaks really highly of him. I think it speaks highly of the coaching staff as well and what they've been able to do with Kyler.
Yeah, I was speaking with Dave Pasch, Cardinals play-by-play voice, ESPN broadcaster. He joins us here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. You know, we switched to college football. There's the debate going on about the handling of Tua Tagovailoa. Doesn't have a happy ending, obviously, for himself, for Alabama, or really for fans of college football that want to see the best players on the field, especially when we get to this point in the season. What are your thoughts on how that was handled by Nick Saban? I'm not a huge Nick Saban fan, but I have a hard time second-guessing that he was healthy enough to play. And, you know, if you want to work on some things, you keep him in there. It kind of made sense to me. What are your thoughts on the whole handling of that situation?
It's the first half. Your best players play. We see starters that play into the fourth quarter of blowouts. It's the first half. I didn't have a problem with it at all. I mean, he was healthy enough to play. If the doctors say he's cleared to play, going into the game, you play him. And I think they were going to take him out after that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, it never crossed their mind. I just think the timing's unfortunate. It's awful. I feel horrible for him. He's a great kid. But I didn't have a problem with it. It's the first half. I think even in a game like that, where you have a healthy lead, you keep going. You keep the foot on the pedal until you get to the middle or end of the third quarter. It's not like, I mean, how many times have we seen a quarterback not finish the first half of a blowout? A quarterback always finishes the first half of a blowout, even if it's 52-0. Now, maybe he doesn't come out of the locker room and start the second half, but I don't remember the last time that even happened.
Yeah.
So I didn't have a problem with it at all.
How do you think it's going to affect the college football playoff, Dave? Do you think this is going to seal it for Alabama? Do you think it... Because the fear here, I don't know if fear is the wrong word, but there was a feeling of an inevitability that even though Alabama had fallen out of the top four, and even though they lost to LSU, that somehow they'd find their way back. They still could find their way back if they can beat Auburn, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough, Dan. I have Oregon there at number four right now. I think the winner of Oregon-Utah will get in. The only thing would be if LSU loses to A&M or LSU loses to Georgia. We actually have LSU-Arkansas this week. I make a wild prediction as I don't see LSU losing that game. Their favorite, I think, it's by like an SEC record 46 points or something. Jeez.
And you've got that game?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pig suey, brother.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about a lot of different things in that game.
Thanksgiving recipes.
Right.
I'm thinking Joe Burrow's still going to finish the first half. I mean, for going back to your Tua question, but yeah, I think it's going to be hard for Alabama to get in.
Okay, so you think the Pac-12 is going to get a team in?
I do, yeah. Oh, I think based on, I mean, Oregon was 10 seconds away from beating Auburn. Utah's really good. Now, I'm saying a one-loss Pac-12 team.
Yeah,
if both
right,
Oregon and Utah have two losses, no. But, yeah, I think if both went out and play in the Pac-12 championship game, the winner of that game is getting in.
Dave Pasch, I guess.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, Vince, I guess the only caveat would be if Georgia wins the SEC championship.
Yeah. Which is entirely possible. I'm switching gears now to the NBA. You do a lot of NBA games, too. And I was just bringing this up, and I looked it up because of what has happened to Golden State. They have the worst record in the NBA. They have just a collection of injuries that beyond their wildest dreams. Yet they have 26 more games, not even counting NBA TV, Dave. They have 26 more games on ESPN and TNT the rest of this year. I don't think many people want to watch them play. Do you think the NBA needs to revisit their the construction of their television schedule? Or is there any way to do it in your mind?
Well, as luck would have it, I've got a Warriors game on Wednesday in Dallas. So, right from the Warriors to LSU, Arkansas. So, I think they're going to look at it. I mean, the problem is a couple things. You know, what do you switch to? There has to be a game that you can switch to.
Sure.
And then also the TV windows that are available. So I'm sure they're looking at trying to find a way to get off some of those games. But, you know, one of the other issues is, you know, if they're playing, like they're playing Dallas, right? They're playing Luka Doncic. You want Luka Doncic on TV. There's a game, a Warriors game in late December that I have where they're playing New Orleans. Now, if Zion Williamson is back, are you going to take Zion Williamson off of TV? You know, that's a question that they have to determine whether, you know, Zion Williamson is a big enough rating. Sorry, guys, I'm boarding here. Nope. There's a big enough rating to warrant moving off that game. So there's got to be a game to switch to, and there has to be a reason outside of just the Warriors to switch out of that game.
Sure. Dave, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate the time and the insight, as always.
Yep, you got to get
Dave. It's all right. Dave Pasch joining us from an airport somewhere via the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line.
I'm guessing he's not in row 31B. I'm guessing that's probably not the case.
Coulter, your family-owned dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. The TV thing, it just popped up. I thought it was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Because you got the local team here. The Suns are making their one and only national television appearance on Thursday night against New Orleans. And they probably had that circled as a Zion game and a DeAndre Ayton game, the last two number one overall picks. Neither one of them will play in that game.
Yeah.
I just think the NBA, and I know there's an anticipation when the schedule comes out to compare who's got the most TV games, but we're seeing this year more so than anything, both teams that were expected to be good being bad in Golden State and teams that were expected to be also Rams. I think there's a lot of people that are curious about the Suns that would like to see them on national TV a few more times. I think it's something that the NBA should really look at.
Listen, and there's a reason why there's reports out today that the NBA ratings are down. It's because of this. It's because there's not national teams that speak to everybody as not like in recent years. It's because Golden State's really decimated and awful, and they've got tons of national TV dates. Nobody trusts the Clippers games anymore, whether Kawhi is going to play. The whole L.A. thing, the L.A.-centric nature of the Western Conference is off-putting to people on that side of the country. There's a lot of tangible reasons why that's happening. The Zion Williamson absence. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's November.
Yeah, but
that's a big deal. You can't forget that.
Dave said, okay, there's got to be other available games to go to. Yes, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But the strategy for the NBA for years on their Thursday night TNT games has been, that's it. Their doubleheader, those are the only games on the schedule.
Yeah.
So it doesn't give you a lot of wiggle room.
That's true.
Like this Thursday, for example, the Blazers play Milwaukee in the opening game, and then the nightcap is New Orleans and the Suns. That's the only two games on the schedule league-wide. And I know they want to showcase those games because it's big, nationally televised stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had more games to choose from, that would give the league flexibility to switch off these less-than-stellar contests. Because, Warriors, they're probably going to find a couple diamonds in the rough in this whole thing, and they already have really one. And Eric Paschal, he's going to be a piece to help build rebuild around. But outside of that, there's not a whole lot of reason to watch them. They're bad.
Very bad.
Unless you want to see a team score 150 points, there's no other reason to watch them right now.
Yeah, okay.
All right, going back to Dave's comments on the Cardinals. Are you a little surprised by his thoughts on the David Johnson scenario? Like the Cardinals owe him nothing?
No, I'm of that mindset myself. But I think there's also a lot to be said for getting the answers you need. I think earlier in the year there was that debate about what does the team owe David Johnson the benefit of the doubt, carries to be the starting running back, and I think maybe for a little while there was some of that, because I think earlier in the year the production was there, even though the aesthetics were not. So there was that. Okay, well, at least he's still producing in the passing game, that kind of thing. Now I think all bets are off. What's got me flummoxed, Vinny, is the whelp from David Johnson, because it speaks to a wow. What just happened? And that and everything he said about David Johnson, I kind of believe in that. He's a very thoughtful, nice guy. So I just don't know what reality he's in right now, and it's frightening to me, because if David Johnson doesn't think he's been doing anything wrong, then we've really got a problem.
Well, if everything we are hearing publicly is indeed the case, that the Cardinals believed he had a good week of practice, that they don't believe he's hurt, that they are going to play running back by committee, if all of those things are true, then I understand, believe it or not, I understand the whelp tweet.
Right.
Because if David Johnson's hearing those things and then he doesn't get the ball and he gets 9 snaps, or he's a decoy basically for 9 snaps.
Yeah.
I'm having that feeling too. But unless there's stuff behind the scenes that we don't know about, I mean, Dave, that whelp tweet is the most dissent we've heard from David Johnson through all of this.
Yeah.
He's not a me, look at me,
right,
woe is me kind of guy. He's just not wired that way.
But also the sit-down strike in training camp under Steve Wilks, I was like,
that's business. That's business.
Yeah, you're right. But somebody talked him into doing something that I would have never thought he was capable of doing ever. And then when he got the money, everything changed. I don't know, man. I don't know. Dave Pash hit on something that I think is at the root of it. Nobody knows what's in his head right now. Nobody knows really what's happened to this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully this benching, even though it wasn't a benching, hopefully the W in whelp will stand for wake-up call.
It was strategic resting? Is that what it was?
Load management is what it was.
Riding the hot hand?
Yeah, right. Oh, that's what it was. Yeah.
Listen each day this week at 7:30, 12:30, and 4:30 for your name and the chance to spin the wheel of sports trips. Each qualifier will have a 44% chance to win one of 12 amazing sports road trips, including 3 trips to Cardinal Seahawks, 3 trips to Suns at Lakers, 3 to ASU basketball at the Pac-12 tournament in Vegas, or 3 to the D-backs at the Cubs. Winners will spin the wheel this Friday. And you still have time to enter by texting SPIN to 620-620 right now. That's SPIN to 620-620. It's the Arizona Sports Wheel of Sports Trips.
Listen, at 12:30 today,
yes.
We could do 2 in a row winners.
We got a streak going. Is one a streak?
Yeah, no.
We can inch toward a streak today if we get 2 in a row, right?
Yes.
Back-to-back can qualify in some realm as a streak.
I like that.
All right, we'll shoot for that. Coming up next, Mock My World. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
A little foreshadowing of today's Sanderson Ford Poll Question. What goalie are you starting if you're Rick Tocchet in a one-game winner-take-all scenario? Now, you can't say Patrick Waugh because he's not one of the choices.
Belfour.
Martin Brodeur.
Ken Dryden.
Terry Sawchuk.
Oh, I love that guy.
Gump Worsley.
Tony Esposito.
Your choices, Darcy Kemper, Antti Raanta. We had the discussion they've each had for the first time in franchise history, back-to-back shutouts by 2 different goalies. Kemper's been the guy. He's played more minutes, 843 to 490. His goals against is better, save percentage is better, and he's been more durable. I would go with Darcy Kemper at this point in that scenario, with the right to change my mind, obviously, by April if it comes to this.
Yeah, okay, I'll let you vote. I don't know which way I'd go. Darcy Kemper's
it's a tough question.
Darcy Kemper's been more reliable, and he's been better in terms of who he is as a player this year. Antti Raanta, though, is the guy that he can just flat-out stone you on the right night. So I think I'd side with you. I think Darcy Kemper's the more reliable goalie right now.
Yeah.
But the star power, I go with Antti Raanta.
70% say Darcy Kuemper right now, 30% for Raanta. Good problem to have, but
yeah.
You can cast your vote. Sanderson Ford poll question on the front page of ArizonaSports.com.
Bickley and Marotta, mock my world.
Are you mocking me? Are you mocking me? Stop it. You just didn't do it again.
Are you mocking me?
It's that time of the week. Tuesday, it's Mock My World time. That's where we have a four-round snake-style draft between the four members of the show. Dan Bickley, Jared Carlin, Eric Cohen, and myself.
Mm-hmm.
Our defending champion this week is one, Jared Carlin.
Wow.
In last week's subject of past athletes, we'd love to just pick up and plug them into today's game, whatever they played. His team of Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Pete Rose, and Joe Namath got 40% of the vote.
Even with that weird fourth pick that Jared is famous for.
Yeah. My team of Babe Ruth, Pete Maravich, Bo Jackson, and Steve Nash finished second. Bick, your team of Muhammad Ali, Mike Tyson, Dan Marino, and Jackie Robinson, 18% third place. Eric Cohen had Wilt the Stilt, Wayne Gretzky, Jerry Rice, and Secretariat, and finished with 10% of the vote. this week, our subject is best foreign-born basketball players. We each get to construct a team of four members. It's a four-on-four tournament, basically, is what we're doing. Snake-style draft, we've determined it through random.org. The draft order today will be Eric Cohen first, Dan Bickley second.
Wow.
Jared Carlin third.
I'm not used to that.
And then I'll have the fourth pick, and then the fifth, and we'll go snake-style from there. Again, best foreign-born basketball players.
All right. I think I'll go with the home favorite, but I think he'd also have a shot to actually be the legit number one. Maybe not. Okay, but Steve Nash.
Steve Nash. It checks all the boxes. He was born in South Africa. He's a son. You check the pandering box. You got them all there.
Yeah, that's right. You check the pandering box. You got them all.
I can't wait to see who your terrible fourth pick will be, though.
Yeah.
Definitely a horse.
Horatio Yamas.
Vic, you're up.
Okay, I am going to go, hard to argue with Hakeem Olajuwon, hard to pass him up, so give me Hakeem Olajuwon.
I was hoping he would last until number four, but there goes my hope.
All right, number three, I'm going to go with the guy who holds all the records for these foreign-born player lists, Dirk Nowitzki.
It's a good pick, Dirk Nowitzki at number one.
Dirk third picksky.
What?
All right.
Who's the third pick? Dirk.
Anyway.
Good Lord.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow is right. All right, Vinny, you got two.
I'm going to go with the current MVP, Giannis.
That's a good pick.
And then I'm going to go. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I'm going to go obscure right off the bat. I'm going to give it a shot here.
Oh, no.
The guy whose career was cut short, but is believed universally to be one of the all-time greats, Drazen Petrovic.
If you ask, like, the Charles Barkleys of the world, they'll say he's the greatest.
Drazen Petrovic, Andrew Toney, two greatest players I ever played with.
All right. It is my second pick. I'm going to go with sort of a technicality, but born in Jamaica, Patrick Ewing.
It's a good one.
Yeah, there's no technicality there.
And that Patrick Ewing Brewing Company's great restaurant.
Right.
I got to get the egg smells on all the glasses.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, my dude.
All right. There's a pick here who deserves it more than the other, but I hate the guy so much I'm not taking it. So give me Luka Doncic, please.
His name is Luka. He lives on the second floor. If Suzanne Vega was a baseball announcer.
All right, Eric.
All right, I'll add some height to my team. I'll take Dikembe Mutombo. Humanitarian as well. Not that that counts, I guess, for this.
Yeah.
And Nikola Jokic, if I'm saying that right. Nikola Jokic.
Wow, already.
The Nuggets.
Wow.
One of the best centers in the league
right now. Seems a little early for him. All right, Dan. Best foreign-born NBA players or basketball players.
Daniel, boy. Is Tim Duncan foreign-born?
No. U.S. Virgin Islands.
That's U.S. Virgin Islands,
yeah.
Is that the technicality you were thinking of, Vinny?
No.
Earlier? It's not? Okay. Okay. In that case, I'll take Yao Ming.
Yao Ming, Yao Ming, Yao Ming, Yao Ming.
He's tall. Jarrett.
All right. Oh, man. There's so many. That's going to kick. It's going to cost me the Suns vote, but I got to go with Tony Parker. Is that the guy that you didn't want to pick, or is it the other Spurs player?
I ain't touching either one of them.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get votes up in here.
Tony? Manu?
Trying to get all right, votes I got, up in here, really?
I got two picks.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm going to go Pau Gasol. And here's where I'm going to unearth my technicality on you.
Well, here it comes.
We have theories.
Kyrie Irving.
Oh,
I knew right. It. That was my theory.
Born in Australia.
You got it. I thought your technicality was going to be that you weren't going to be able to use was since Kobe was born in America but raised in a foreign country.
He was born in Pennsylvania.
Right.
Yeah. So ineligible.
Kyrie Irving doesn't strike me as a foreign-born player at all, but hey, you do you.
Good old I might.
Is Australia one of the United States?
Of course he was born there. I mean, of course he's a foreign-born player. But he doesn't strike me.
I checked during the commercial break.
But he doesn't strike me to be in the spirit of this competition, is what I'm saying.
The earth is flat, mate.
What strikes you?
Does that mean Uncle Drew is Australian, too?
It's a fictional character. He lives in a van, Eric. We all know this.
But is he Australian?
Jarrett?
All right, I'm going to go with... Boy... Ben Simmons, right, is Canadian?
No, but he's foreign.
Oh, Australian. That's Australian. What I meant. Yes, the Canada of the South Pacific. I'm going to go with, yes,
not even.
Ben Simmons.
All right, Ben Simmons is off the board. Bick?
I will take Dominique Wilkins.
Oh.
Wait a minute.
Who was born in Paris, France.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's a good one.
Oh, man, that's a... I hate to say this because you were so harsh on my pick.
Well, I wasn't going to go there.
It's not in the spirit of the competition.
Oh, it is. No, it isn't.
But it's a great pick.
It isn't. That
is a great
one. Because you went to Kyrie Irving.
The human highlight, the real okay.
okay. Oh, fromage.
Dominique Wilkins. Eric, you have the last pick.
All right, I'll close this out with another center. How about Joel Embiid? Cameroon.
Joel Embiid. Man, there's a lot of talent left on the board. Huh?
Yeah, there sure is.
Kristaps Porzingis.
Kristaps
right?
Porzingis.
Tony Kukoc.
Goran Dragic.
Detlef Schrempf.
Ricky Rubio.
You remember when Dan Patrick made Detlef Schrempf a household
name?
Schrempf.
All right, Eric's team, Steve Nash, Dikembe Mutombo, Nikola Jokic, and Joel Embiid. Bick's got Hakeem, Luka, Yao, and Dominique Wilkins. Jared's got Dirk, Patrick Ewing, Tony Parker, and Ben Simmons. I got Giannis, Drazen Petrovic, Pau Gasol, and Kyrie Irving. I don't feel good about my chances. As we bet this up on Twitter, at Bickley underscore Murata, you determine the winner every week. It's Mock My World here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
And Bickley and Vince Murata.
And yes, the rumors are true. They smoke, they drink, they use bad language in mixed company. They're extremely rich, and they can flash more bling than most posses in this room. Rock stars they are, and God bless them for that.
Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
You got to make shots to get an assist. I said that before the game, but the ball movement was not there. We only had 22 for the game. You know, that's not us. We haven't had 20-point quarters the whole year. We had two tonight. So it's a great learning experience for us. We have an identity, and one of those components is sharing the ball. And when we move the ball and have player movement, we're pretty good.
It's Monty Williams last night, head coach of the Phoenix Suns, after a 99-85 loss to the Boston Celtics, in which the Suns shot only 40% from the floor, 22 assists on 33 made baskets. Oh, by the way, Ricky Rubio didn't play.
Yeah.
Back spasms. Javon Carter ended up getting the start last night, played about 24 minutes in the game. Carter talked about it afterwards when he found out he was starting.
About 5 minutes before we ran out on the court.
And what was your mindset when you heard the news?
Surprise, but ready.
Here's Javon Carter about the lack of identity last night for the Suns.
We're at our best when we're playing ourselves. I felt like we played a lot out of character tonight, both offensively and defensively. So when we just play ourselves, we play very good basketball.
Yeah, Javon Carter did speak last night. Dario Saric spoke. Aaron Baines spoke. A couple guys who didn't speak, Kelly Oubre Jr., Devin Booker. There's been a little bit of, I don't know if criticism is the right word, maybe wonderment on why they didn't speak after a tough game like that. I know the team was getting ready to board a bus to get to the airport to get to Sacramento, but that wouldn't stop other players from talking. I guess it's disappointing. You asked me the question earlier in the show. Are you disappointed that Devin Booker didn't speak after what it was a tough game for him? Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to hear what he has to say pretty much after every game.
I think so, and I think that as leaders of the team, you have to be there every night. Yeah, because, again, it's this whole idea of if what you're doing is trying to build something bigger than Ricky Rubio, bigger, if you're trying to build a culture, then part of that culture is having core guys who are there every night, talking to the media, being conduits to fans. And if you're not, then it kind of speaks to a level of immaturity or a level of, it's not a good look. I mean, if you're there to accept praise and be there when you win, you've got to be there when you lose. So that's kind of my thought on that.
Yeah, I would agree. It was a rough night for Devin Booker. 7 of 13, so he still hit over 50% of his shots. He made all of his free throw attempts, 2 of 4 from three-point range, so the shooting percentages weren't compromised at all. But he did have 5 turnovers, and it looked to me, Bick, and I think you would agree, that as the game wore on and the Suns got a little bit more desperate offensively because they couldn't fall back on their ball movement. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that had to do with what Boston was doing defensively from an intensity standpoint. Devin Booker almost reverted back to Devin Booker of the past, like the water boy, like Mr. Coach Klein. You're going to have to do this all by yourself because there's nobody on this team that's any good. It didn't work out very well for him.
Yeah.
A lot of turnovers, a lot of out-of-control possessions. It was just one of those nights for the Suns. I don't know if the Suns beat the Celtics with Ricky Rubio last night, if all things remained equal.
That's a good point. I think you're going up against a Boston Celtics team. You talk about culture in the NBA, and I think for the Boston Celtics, last night was a culture kind of moment for them where they were coming off a loss. They were playing a back-to-back, and they were playing a team that suddenly didn't have its point guard. I think they took a lot of pride in showing, hey, we're the Boston Celtics. We bring tenacity and a defense everywhere we go. And here you go, deal with this. And like you said, Marcus Smart's really, really good at it. They had a good strategy on Devin Booker. And whether or not this was of this, and maybe their level of defense was enough to kind of throw the Suns out of their offense. And that was the big complaint of Monty Williams after the game, that the Suns were not the Suns. They didn't stay true to what they believe in as an offense in terms of moving the ball. Maybe you got to give the Celtics a little credit for that.
Yeah.
Because the team has played well without Ricky Rubio in the past, but they didn't play a team like Boston without him.
Well, I mean, they did play the Clippers.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, before Paul George came back, I get it. But they beat the Clippers with Kawhi playing a major role without Ricky Rubio really early in the season. A much, much more promising performance that night without Rubio than the night before. Now, they got a game tonight. They have a really busy week through the Suns.
Yeah, they do.
5 games in 7 calendar days, so you hope this is not a situation with Ricky Rubio that lingers because he is important to the team. Let me ask you this question. Everybody, for good reason, has been going gaga over Aaron Baines this year. Thrust into a bigger role because of the suspension to DeAndre Ayton, has performed really well. Last 2 games have been tough for Aaron Baines. Against Atlanta, played only 18 minutes, 3 points, 0 for 3 from three-point range. Last night, a little bit better, 9 points, 6 rebounds, passed the ball really well, 5 assists, took a couple of big shots, including one to the midsection that had a lot of guys in the arena cringing last night.
I saw that, yeah. No, you're right.
But he's cooled off a little bit, 9 and 6 last night. Is Aaron Baines maybe regressing back to what he was expected
to
be?
I mean, he was just so above what he's always been that, I mean, that would have taken quite an evolution to sustain over the course of a season. Yeah, I think this is going to become a recurring theme here. I think this team is going to kind of settle in a little bit here, and I don't mean in a good way. I think they're going to encounter some bumps, some struggles, some teams that are more focused to play them. I think they're going to get performances that are maybe less than what we've seen in the first 10 games. I think it's going to kind of illuminate the loss of DeAndre Ayton and what a skilled player he is, regardless of what you think about his potential and how much is being left on the table. I think you're going to see a lot of it, but I still think they're going to be a really good team. I like the coaching on this team. I like that Monty Williams didn't let his guys off the hook. I like the fact in some way that if Monty Williams said something to the two leaders of this team that bothered them enough to not speak to the media, well, that tells me he's not afraid to take on tough issues. And I'm going to tell you something. There have been a lot of basketball coaches here in Phoenix, starting with Mike D'Antoni, who didn't like to always deal with the tough issues.
Yeah.
He didn't.
That's true.
And it's because when you get something good going, you feel real proud of it, and you got a lot of good stuff going. You know this as parents. If you have kids, and say your kids are really giving you a great effort, and then they mess up, and you don't want to come down hard on them, too hard on them, because they've been really good for a couple of weeks, but you have to.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to because you don't want to be the bad guy because you've built something good, but you do it because you have to. That's kind of what Monty Williams was last night, kind of like a strict parent.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that.
Suns and Kings tonight, 8 o'clock, 7:30 pregame with Al McCoy and Tim Kempton right here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. I just want to read one quick Mock My World related tweet.
Sure.
It seems like a lot of people start listening to Mock My World when pick number two happens.
Uh-oh.
This from Austin. You guys forgot about Steve Nash. I am no longer listening to this radio show. I would argue you weren't listening in the first place, Austin.
That's
you know, I think he already deleted that tweet.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Sorry, Austin. It's always up. Once you hit send, it's out there forever. The Bickley Blast is straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.